Mein Name ist Rena Tangens vom Fürgut aus Bielefeld. Ich werde heute eine super kurze Einführung darin geben, wie RFID überhaupt zum Thema wurde im Kontext von Datenschutz. Und danach werden wir Andreas Krisch hören, der dann die Folgen im europäischen Kontext und nicht nur in Bezug auf RFID, sondern vielleicht auch die weiterführenden.
So the continuation into the EU Data Protection Directive that might be. And then there'll be a Q&A. All right. Fürgut has been existing since 1987, and since 2000 we are bestowing the Big Brother Awards, a negative award about data protection. And by the way, until the end of this year, until the 31st, you can nominate for the next German Big Brother Awards. The Big Brother Awards have actually put RFID on the agenda, and that was in 2003. When the Future Store near Duisburg, it's a supermarket, a fairly regular supermarket, that was using RFID in the wild for the first time. It belongs to a Metro, a large supermarket chain, and we were bestowing that award in a preventative way. There was no concrete data violation at the time, but we thought this technology has so much potential about data protection, violation, tracking, that we will bestow this award in a preventative way. So this was the first time we managed to get some attention for this topic. In February 2004, we organized a talk in Bielefeld with the American consumer activist Catherine Albrecht, and we were able to lure her to Germany with the chance of visiting that store. Here we see these chips in the wild on a packet of cream cheese, and they were hidden under the barcode. We had the opportunity to get a guided tour of the store, and we were given a three-hour introduction to the Metro crew, and we were getting explanations about how it all works. And how justified the award was in 2003, we only noticed after our visit. When we gave a talk in Bielefeld about our visit and in the interval showed how reading the RFID tag works in practice, we had a reader, and of course we had been buying some goods in the supermarket, so we were putting that on the scanner and saw how the numbers popped up. And someone in the audience says, "Hey, what about the customer card?" "No, no," we said, "no, we just had a three-hour guided tour. They didn't say anything about the customer card, but why not try it? So, Bettina, you have this card, don't you? Why don't you just hand it over?" And we put it on the reader, and you can see it live there. This was the actual event, and it says blip, and a number came up. 10,000 customers of that supermarket were walking with a bug like that in their pockets without having any idea about it. And we couldn't have staged it any better. This was happening live, a discovery. Completely surprising. So the next day, we took that card to an X-ray practitioner and were able to see the antennas in the card. And of course, that led us to give a call to Metro. And the press spokesperson said, "Oh, I have no time at all right now. I'll get back to you later." Now, later was 5 p.m., and they were sending us photos at that time and telling us that the DVD shelf actually had the hint or the information that the chip was on a customer card. Well, never mind the fact that the DVD shelf is not the right place, because you should be told about this as you apply for the customer card. Even that was another lie. Here we see the photo that Metro sent us on Monday, the 2nd of February, and this was our own photo taken at our visit on the 31st of January, 2 days earlier, and there were a few signs less at the time. So all you could read there was that you could unlock the trailer or look at the trailer for that movie. Now, that we thought was a bit too much deception, so we publicized this. and told Metro that we thought their fuel trial was getting out of control and told them to stop. Metro, of course, said, well, we don't care. So we called for a demo, and the Chaos Computer Club joined us pretty quickly. The Green Party's youth organization and other groups, and Metro were getting cold feet. One day before the demo, they sent us a fax telling us they would withdraw the card, well, not because of any factual reasons, but because of the emotional atmosphere that had been created. But it was too late. The demo went ahead, pictures went around the world. The first demo on this issue, newspapers, including the Financial Times, were reporting, and that again had an effect on Metro's stock value, which fell, and German TV attributed that decline in the stock market value to our action. So if we knew about speculation, we would have found a way to finance our association at the time. The RFIB lobby were playing hardball. They were threatening the press with injunctions and informal pressure, like withdrawing ads, was also applied, and the press on RFID were told to uninvite critical voices on RFID for discussion panels and the like. And the TV program that whose webpage is shown there was withdrawn by the TV channel, although the court case was actually won in the end. What we did then was to go to the CeBIT trade fair in 2006 with a large floating banner, and we thought after 5 minutes, but then that would have produced some very unpleasant pictures, and we were able to walk around for quite a while and distribute leaflets until finally someone from the trade fair organizers got to us and told us to withdraw this banner because it was above the height admissible for ad banners in that hall. I can imagine how a legal person in the background was sitting there and leafing through the regulations until he found some way of framing us. Then there was a survey by a consumer organization about attitudes toward RFID, and there are two interesting items in that. The first, in Germany, the percentage of people knowing what RFID was is highest in comparison. This is 26% only were saying they had never heard of RFID, the lowest percentage of all. And then on top there, there's 37% of people saying that data protection is an important factor if they were to buy a product fitted with RFID. So data security, data protection regarded important in Germany. So we can say that was good work from our part. The RFID Information Forum, which is a lobby organization by the industry, then started a competition, a design competition for an RFID logo. And this was, of course, to propose to the EU Commission, to be proposed to the Commission, who was probably going to introduce a labeling obligation. This is the winner of the industry design competition. So we went ahead and made up a design competition of our own, and this was our winner. So the rollout then did not take place, but the issue isn't over yet, and we have applications coming to the market now. This one won a new Big Brother Award in 2007, a fashion brand who sew RFID chips against product piracy into their jackets. And this is why they say on the patch that hides the RFID label, do not remove this label. Gary Weber another German fashion company puts the RFID chips into the textile care instruction labels, which eases stock taking and also serves for securing against theft. These tags can be read across 8 meters distance. If you consider that this data, well, it does belong to the product, but it can be related to a person. And if we consider that 8 meter distance, we know that we have some work to do still. So thank you. And we now switch over to Andreas Krisch.
In the meantime, we can quickly announce that you can give us feedback and any sort of comments under the Twitter hashtag 28C3EN. 28C3EN, Twitter hashtag, for any sort of feedback for the live interpretation. And now Andreas Krisch, which is going to be spoken by me. So, yes, Lena has already explained that RFID technology has arrived in the society quite loudly, and about the time the Föbud has made it public with the Metro, and at the same time I have started working in Vienna on the same topic, questions like what are the problems, what is the situation, and so also saying it's not only Föbud and my organization in Austria, and together with, we also work together with Chaos Computer Club, other organizations, 28 together in Europe from 18 countries. That is European Digital Rights, the organization that makes sure that fights for data protection in Europe, and by this publicity through these actions. So these actions made the clear for the European Commission that there won't be RFID technology widespread in Europe unless we don't work on the data protection. So that's why the European Commission in 2009 enacted an expert group that is working on RFID and data protection, and invited some sort of all kinds of labor unions and industry organizations and data protection organizations and public data protection organizations and EDRI as well. Standardization bodies also, and us, EDRI. So one day we got an email from the European Commission if we don't want to send someone into this commission and of experts, and yes, that was a good idea for us, and we were prepared content-wise, and we were competent enough to say something about this, so we accepted the offer and entered the discussion process. That you can imagine that somehow like gladiator fights don't happen in the arena, but more at the table with very, very hard positions on both sides. The industry said, no, data protection will kill our industry. Data protection was saying, oh, this is going to kill any sort of data protection in Europe and privacy in Europe. And that was the original positions. So in the first 6 months, we basically spent our time with putting our arguments on the table, and each side with very good statements and making sense for itself. And please take over.
So without data protection, we won't have data protection unless there will be measures. So, and this was related to discussions about video surveillance, where it has been agreed that some signage has to be there. And so we could foresee that something like this would be coming for RFID. The question was, how would it be? And so the ball was being played between the RFID Information Forum and Föbud. This was perfect timing on Fürbot's part. Fürbot did this in Germany. The information forum is in Germany too. I was in Vienna and in the expert group at the EU Commission, and we were watching this from a distance, as it were. And one day we were sitting in Brussels at the Commission, and we started to go through the papers and find these two logos in the papers from the EU Commission. And the color change in the faces of the industry representatives was quite nice to observe. Both logos, one to one, their logo next to Fürbot's one, it couldn't have been better. So to cut it short, the result was neither of these two logos will be used. The European Standardization Agreement groups are actually busy working on the logo right now. So neither this nor that will be the actual logo, but hopefully it will be a good one. The result of that work at the expert group was that in 2009, the EU Commission gave a recommendation about RFID. This is about the weakest tool in their toolbox. It is not legally binding. It is a proposition to member states what should be taken care of in terms of RFID and the industry to ensure data protection and security. Three important points there. The Commission says who uses RFID shall should make a privacy assessment beforehand to find out what the implications are to the privacy of the customers. Second item, retailers must offer a way of deactivating the RFID tags at the checkout, unless the privacy assessment first came to the result that.
So the deactivation selling the assessment was also to guarantee transparency, and it must be clear that what are reading devices and what products are labeled with RFIDs, and there must also be infos and about the whole data protection and how people can get information about it. And the industry wasn't happy about it, but it was in general it was a good compromise. It was a good compromise for the data protection activists, and it wasn't very much like we don't do very all data protection at all, and it wasn't full data protection, but we understood that this was a good compromise, and the European Commission wants to evaluate this after 3 years, and then if it works, everything's fine. If not, they will take harder measures. In next spring, the European Commission will evaluate the measures, and we will have to talk about the measures and the implementation, and as you can see, so far there hasn't happened very much in terms of data protection, so that you will the European Commission will have to take stronger measures.
The
industry is required to implement a privacy impact assessment, which is a self-regulation process. They will have to make sure that what measures they are going to take in order to secure privacy, and that's what they wrote. They wrote a paper with some text on it, and thought they might just come through with that, with not implementing it, but with just writing something down. But the European Commission, required that the assessment is to be endorsed by the Article 29 Working Party, but they said it is not finished yet, and we want to give it back, and we don't want to approve this. And the industry and European Commission also said, it's not that well done through yet, and in 2011, so the privacy and impact assessment was only finished in 2011 after going back and forth, and now it's quite okay, and it takes the European Data Protection Law as a basic assessment and makes sure that this is the requirements are met, and sets known risks of RFID technology in relation to that, and makes propositions how the European Data Protection Law can be fulfilled with these with the RFID technology. The question is how seriously this is implemented, and that is the question. You know, if you don't take it seriously, then it doesn't make any sense. If you take it seriously, it can produce quite good results. And
the classical thinking is that you're thinking of name, address, and shoe size and things like that. Article 29 now says that at the basis of current EU legislation, the data protection directive that we have, if a tag is carried by a person with a unique ID, and the tag is probably going to be worn by a person or carried by a person, then that number can be related to a person and is personal data. So protected just like any other personal data. The reason given for this is the fact that that number and the radio transmission that is not visible, at any time a data collection could be started on that. You need that idea and you can then track the person, and using that idea you can find out what product it is and all the details of the product and so on. So from that point of view, it's clear.
So if RFID is
automatically personal data, and in that case, it has to be deactivated at the point of sale or removed. So that was a huge success there, much more than we could expect. But of course, now that has to be implemented correctly, which is why we're now very active to look at the industry, and they might be saying, okay, we have found this great way out and we've made our impact assessments. We have to look at those assessments and see how have these assessments actually been done. For example, that big chain that starts with M and ends with O. If they say the assessment had said there was no impact on privacy using the definition of personal data, you ask yourself, how was that possible? So again, with the evaluation by the Commission, we have to get involved and get this topic going, make sure that exactly at this point the assessment quality is being ensured, and we have to observe if things are really handled the way they say they are. So what happened since that recommendation 2009 is that the Commission has gone one step further. They've said RFID is all very well, but where does the whole journey go next? And that's the Internet of Things. So not just those silly RFID tags who radio their identity number and can't do anymore, but autonomous data processing embedded into objects, networked sensor systems and things like that. So for that reason, now we have a further expert group, the Internet of Things expert group, which has been founded last year with similar
For example, smart metering. So yeah, what does Internet of Things mean? Exactly, smart metering, for example. So if our electricity and gas meters and start sending our usage data and therefore information what happened in our flats, send them all to the energy companies. Another example is intelligent transport systems, where the transport and road transport are networked with each other, where one vehicle tells it, another one how the roads are, what the roads look like, if there has been an accident before, what the weather looks like. All this communication between individual vehicles is a classical example for Internet of Things. So what does that mean? We have very strong automatized identification of objects that, as with RFID, can lead to the identification of certain people, and of course also the identification of certain behavioral patterns and preferences and geographical positions of people, and so on and so on. So we have the same traceability. We have the building of profiles. We have, obviously, the risk of that these data is used for other purposes than the intended one, and we have the rate risk that the combination of all these data can be used for additional things, and will make citizens very transparent if this is used on a wide range, especially when the control remote controlling of buildings is also integrated in that, etc. So we are in the situation where we are currently have problems with data protection guidelines that is 15 years old, and these problems will be enforced with these guidelines. And the question is how we can make data protection fit for the Internet of Things, and how we can proceed in our future with the current data protection, and how we can strengthen this protection. So how another question is, how can we get data protection in these objects in the same manner as we first had cars without a security belt, and then we had the car makers implement these security belts, and just that way we have to learn in this area how to build IT software applications and so on in a manner that data protection is already integrated and not just in through some sort of backing and legal obligations to prevent abuse. So that's one of the technical problems.
Objekten mit IT, die relativ knappe Ressourcen hat.
So, and that all we have to implement with objects that have very scarce resources, such as data capacity and processing power, and it is enough to be harmful, but we still have to implement data protection in that. That is a hurdle we have to overcome. Also, and another question is, how can I be as a person,
for example, if we have room control by diverse factors, how do we get at the information that this is taking place? How can I ensure that things are not being done with my personal data that I don't and that I would not agree to? And, how can I be sure that the data protection principles, data minimization, data being bound to specific use and all that are being ensured without actually being able to look into the actual application? And the problem is, of course, is that the various applications then have to work together as well. So that again leads us to the question, who in the end is going to be the operator of the whole thing if applications communicate with each other and use information as they need in an autonomous way? So maybe there is no way of knowing as one operator how the whole thing, the cooperation works.
So
what do we want to achieve? We need for this
the opportunity to use the legal principles, which are not that bad if we just look at the principles without their application in practice. We have to get those applied here. We need more responsibilities of operators. They need to feel more responsibility for the IT that they actually put out into the world. And of course, we need law enforcement. We often see that enforcement is actually lacking quite a bit. So for that, we need opportunities to put this into practice technologically. So the basic pillar is the people have to keep control about what happens to their data. It has to be possible to communicate this to people in a way that is understood even by people who are not experts in the Internet of Things, so that they can then decide competently whether they want to participate. And of course, we need a harmonization of data protection standards in general. We have a very fragmented state of things right now, and we have to see how we get a more unified approach there. So this means we want that there is a general application of privacy impact assessments. We want a catalogue of best practices and generally recognized risks have to be answered. We would like to see data protection embedded by design into applications, and we need therefore a better harmonization, unification of the law as it is applied and enforced. This means we need to talk not just about needing privacy by design and about privacy by default being a good thing. We have to take that next step and then put these concepts into practice in the IT. This is the main point, and this is mainly a technological challenge, but of course it's also a challenge on the concept level, and we need
in solche Dinge zu investieren, dann wird es in den meisten Fällen nicht stattfinden. Und insofern
need incentives for investments into these concepts, and this, of course, the financial matter is, of course, an important aspect. So we need a strengthening of data protection supervisory authorities. We need stronger sanctions against violations. We need obligations for operators to inform about data protection violations, and it would be quite sensible from our point of view that data protection commissioners should be introduced on a blanket level, and this happens in Germany, but we haven't got that all over Europe right now.
Also, we need a set of legal clarifications, so when is this regulation really valid, and when can I say, okay, I'm informed properly and I want to take up this risk? So let's talk about the data protection reform during the question and answers, and then we can look at the current leaked plans from the European Commission and how they think about data protection in Europe in the future. So my question, applause for Andreas Krisch to Andrena Tangens. Round of applause. We have now about 13 minutes for Q&A, and I would like to ask all attendees to stay until the end, because the unrest in the room is bad for the atmosphere. We have also a signal angel who will take up questions from the IRC channel. And yeah, my first question would be to the attendees who has any questions. So first question is that we can't say what devices collect data about us. It can be the TV that collects the data about what we watch, and it can be every other device that collects data and sends it somewhere. So it would be the question whether we can regulate that the interface has to open source, has been open sourced, so by every device that collects and transmits data, so we can see that what happens there, so all the source has to be transferred to the European Commission in order for the public to see what happens with our tools, and then the question would be if this open source tool can not only be used by the users, but also experts who can have a look at the open source interfaces, for example from Sony and Apple, that would be publicized, and then that would, yeah, that should be opportunity that every manufacturer should accept, and then we can all see what happens with our data.
Well, in major parts, I think from the point of view of enforcement, to get everything open source, I think, would not be possible. The important thing will be open standards. Standardization is, of course, something that the Commission is going to organize and will have to achieve this to be all open, and there's going to have to be unified regulations. Next to data protection, the EU Commission, of course, cares about e-governance or governance. The option that the Internet of Things should not get into the same constellation or situation that we have it with ICANN at the moment, where Europe does not have the influence it would like to have. So this is one of the interests of the Commission, to be in the driver's seat in that respect and lead the way. The Japanese are fairly well advanced and there is a cooperation with them, but basically the principle is open standards are key, and one of the points in the proposal, that the upcoming proposal by the EU Commission about data protection law would be the right to data portability. There should be interfaces between data, and then should be interoperable formats, should be standardized.
So it's also important for me that it's not only open, but also produced by certain standards, and that means that privacy by default is a serious design criteria, and that during developing the technology, people have to think about if this feature is needed and if not. So we had a discussion with someone here about the controlling of public transport and individual transport, and how could this work if you wanted to travel through Germany with one RFID card and public transport, and how the data is transferred, and that this couldn't be prevented, and I'm convinced that it could be prevented, that not too many data is produced, and I am convinced that privacy by design, if we implement that as one design principle, we can make sure that it makes sense and it makes usable, and I think we should use our technical creativity to find solutions that are usable for all. And the other task we have is to make public pressure so that all that happens. So all the privacy assessment thing is handled as a risk, and our work, I see our work as a risk factor for companies, and if we create enough risk for these companies, something will move and the design will change, and we have to do this now because the development needs time, and when we If we already have this in all the devices we carry in our pockets and on with us, then we can't do very many things about it, and then we need lawful regulation take over.
Of course, data protection is not a very new idea. My question is simply, does this have a role at the moment when the EU thinks about reforms? Of course, data protection rules always are a step behind the technology that gets more and more complicated, and it's not easy to put that into legalese. The second question, Internet of Things, of course, it's more than RFID. The problem I see mainly in the link between the personal relatable data. I've always said that I don't much care whether the products at Metro are being tagged. The problem is if they can be related to a person. So what's the development at the moment in connection related to RFID and personal or person relatable data? Can we say that we can unlink it from the personal relation? The problem, of course, is that RFID is getting into into passports as well now. So is the trend towards personal data or is the trend towards logistics, as the proponents always say, make it easy to follow products in the store and which would make it pointless to think about data protection. So, of course, if I walk an RFID chip through the streets, this is another matter. So what are the trends?
Yes, so... the second part first. It is for 10 years. We have talked about the intelligent fridge and the intelligent washing machine, and I haven't seen them personally. And I was told that there's somewhere was one in some laboratory. There is until today no single business model that. Realistically explains our usage of RFID after sale. So there are very many business models that make sense until the cash desk, for example, security and all these other things. But there's no business plan that integrates the usage of RFID tags after sale. So it's not only about laziness, but it's also about the usage in the market. So if no one is using the RFID tags, it's difficult to build a business plan upon that. If everybody uses them already, then it would make sense. So if I could say I will switch on this RFID for this single application, then that would make sense. But until then, it is there is no single business model.
And concerning data protection reform, the trend is surely to increase responsibility on the side of the operators. Sanctions seem there is thought about raising sanctions significantly up to a certain percentage of companies' turnover. So regarding sanctions, there are approaches how it should be done, and the companies are being obliged much more and have to demonstrate that they take their obligation seriously, and supervising authorities are strengthened as well. So all three pillars of this equation are being addressed and strengthened. But this is the very first draft which has to go through a whole negotiation process, and only at the very end of it, which will be at 2 years at the earliest, we'll really know what's going to happen. The draft has been leaked to State Watch. and there will be links on the page about the talk.
Ja, die erste wäre erstmal, braucht man diese Datenschutzmaßnahmen aus den 80ern noch, um die, heute die technische Entwicklung auszugleichen?
Do we need the data protection rules from the 80s to actually regulate inventions from today? And the answer is, well, I don't think we need these all these 90s post-privacy ideas either.
Well, every single one of us will have must have the choice, or has the choice, whether they want their data completely out in the open or whether he or she has any aspects that they don't want to share. And exactly this choice is what it's all about, and we cannot give up that choice.
The next question is if there are currently available on the market any examples available on the market for something like privacy by design, or aren't there any, and do we need, how can we generate incentives with the manufacturers?
Well, that term is quite heavily used at the moment. There is all kinds of technology that is privacy friendly and integrates data protection without you having to display that in large letters. You can, for example, look at the products that do receive data protection certificates. There's the European Privacy Seal, for example. These are given out for products that are particularly good in terms of data protection, not just fulfilling the legal framework, but going beyond that. So that would be privacy by design. If you hear some applause, this is from room one. We're sitting above room one.
I wanted to add for this rebuttal, sorry, that you have to have the choice. That is very important that I don't want to be suspicious, considered suspicious only because I don't want to make these data public. The series How I Met Your Mother had exactly that theme. So they arranged a date and said, how about we don't Google each other? And what the other person said, well, that makes you suspicious. And he said, no, I don't have anything to hide. But why do I make myself suspicious? Only that because I don't want people to see my data. And that has to be possible technically and as well as socially, that people don't want to be Googled or found.
It's very important to strengthen supervisory authorities. In Europe, you have the situation that in practically no countries, two countries, we have the same standards. The European Basic Law Agency has conducted a study which came to the result that most privacy supervisory authorities are not using their powers to the full because the laws aren't fully in place. So we have completely different approaches to data protection. Germany kind of is the shining example. Other countries are not as good but improving. The point is absolutely, it's not whether I have something to hide, but whether others should know.
I wanted to add, that we may just add some questions when we finish the talk. I have a point that goes in the same direction. There's two aspects that are currently undermining this effort. One is the social and one is the economic pressure. So there's one point that I have to undertake economic problems just because I don't want to my data used. So if I sorry, you have to take just got a block.
And I wasn't quite following either. This is a difficult question. If you have a season ticket in public transport, do you still have the choice answer? Well, there's one item here, the coupling prohibition. Using a service must not depend on you giving up your data. Mostly giving up your data is just about paying. And if there is another way of ensuring that the service is getting paid for, there is no need to actually register all the data. Especially when ticketing for public transport is concerned, there is a concept that makes this possible anonymously, nationwide, which would make it possible to use public transport across the country without giving up your identity and without getting tracked. But this is now on us as customers to demand this, because otherwise we'll just hear, well, customers want this, customers want the comfort, and it's all working as it is. So we need to get the conscientiousness or the knowledge going that these things can be set up. And in one way, we have this in the recommendation by the Commission about RFID data protection, because it explicitly states that consumers shall not have disadvantages if they insist on RFID getting deactivated. So coupling extra services to that, to RFID tags being still in use, is not allowed. This is not legally binding yet, but it's in the recommendation, and we have the first step towards this into the right direction.
One last question via IRC. Are there already ideas for counteractions in sort of, in terms of, like, let's walk past some sort of truck with RFIDs with a microwave? There are currently no planned protests against RFID or Internet of Things apart from those that exist. I want to say one thing. The introduction that Rena did, I am very much convinced that the whole discussion on the EU level between the experts and the European Commission wouldn't have happened if there hadn't been the resistance against this technology in Germany. I am very sure that this has been one of the most important points, that this has taken this direction, and therefore I am very sure that we have to stay active and recognizable, and also recognizable, articulate recognizable if there things happen that we don't like.
This story about the RFID chips in the customer card that we discovered. We actually forced Metro to withdraw the card. We would not have dreamed about being able to do that. This was actually our enlightening moment, our realization that we can actually achieve something. We had about 60 members at the time, and Metro is the third largest retailing company worldwide. So if we do something at the right point, we can actually achieve something, and that we can do with giving out information, with using creative intelligence, and we can, of course, do that with the work and on the European level as well. If everyone else start putting the pressure on in their favorite places, we can actually achieve something.
So thank you very much also for listening. If anybody listened, you can give us feedback under the hashtag 28C3. I'm Julian. This is Sebastian.
Yes, I'm Sebastian. And this was a very difficult talk to translate. Very quick speaking. Very
Andreas is very fast. But we're going to continue tomorrow. And you can contact me on Twitter and have the handle HDSJulian, or you can write under the hashtag 28C3EN. And give us feedback, or tell us if you want to join. We're still looking for additional people, because translating more than an hour with two people is very, very hard.
Oh yes.
And we're looking for people who want to try, who are good in English and understand German.
And there will also be updates on the blog at events.ccc.de about locations and outputs.
Exactly. And thanks very much for listening. Give us a note if you did. We're not sure if this was even listened by one person, but we had fun by, It was the first day.
Absolutely.
We were trying and we are learning, and thanks for listening anyway. Bye-bye.
Bye.